Before I begin, please indulge me. I want to comment on the terrorist attacks that have taken place in Brussels. The thoughts and the prayers of the American people are with the people of Belgium, and we stand in solidarity with them in condemning these outrageous attacks against innocent people. We will do whatever is necessary to support our friend and ally Belgium in bringing to justice those who are responsible. And this is yet another reminder that the world must unite. We must be together, regardless of nationality, or race, or faith, in fighting against the scourge of terrorism. We can and we will defeat those who threaten the safety and security of people all around the world.
Le terrorisme a frappé la Belgique, mais c'était l'Europe qui était visée. Et c'est tout le monde qui est concerné. Ces attaques viennent après d'autres. Paris a été particulièrement ciblé l'année dernière. Nous sommes devant une menace globale qui exige d'y répondre globalement. La France et la Belgique sont liées par l'horreur que nous venons une fois encore de partager. Et j'ai assuré au gouvernement belge tout le soutien indispensable pour que nous puissions apporter tous les moyens qui seront nécessaires.
Bu vesileyle bugün sabah saatlerinde Brüksel'de meydana gelen ve terörün küresel yüzünü bir kez daha gösteren saldırıları lanetliyor, Belçika hükümetine ve halkına taziyelerimi sunuyor, milletimiz adına dayanışma duygularını paylaşmak istiyorum. Geçtiğimiz hafta Brüksel'deydik. Bugün burada tekrar küresel teröre ve her türlü teröre.
These are appalling and savage terrorist attacks, and I've just spoken to the Prime Minister of Belgium to give our sympathies and our condolences to the Belgian people, and we absolutely stand with them at this very difficult time. These were attacks in Belgium. They could just be attacks, just as well be attacks in Britain or in France or Germany or elsewhere in Europe. And we need to stand together against these appalling terrorists and make sure they can never win. I've also made sure that we've offered every support to the Belgian security and policing and intelligence forces at this time. But these are difficult times. These are appalling terrorists. But we must stand together to do everything we can to stop them and to make sure that although they attack our way of life and they attack us because of who we are, we will never let them win.
But it's also a very sad day for Europe, as Europe and its capital are suffering. Is the most powerful message of strength and friendship among our people that we can pass to those that would like to divide us. We will not. We will stay together. I will stop here. You will understand this. Today is a difficult day.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your kind words. Thank you for your strong message of support to Jordan. And we stand with you today and with our friends in Europe and with all peace-loving nations in
Mein Beileid. To the Leute from Brussels, my condolences to the family of the two killed Americans in Brussels, to meine Freunde in Deutschland, the passen Sie sehr auf, bleibt gesund, bleibt aufgewacht, schauen Sie alles an. Hi, my name is JDR, live on your iTunes, your Android, your iOS, on Podomatic.com, David Robinson at Blogspot.com, Tom Aquan at your-poetry.com, and don't forget the YouTube channel, and also, we are on SoundCloud. We need to stop these guys. I heard they killed the second in command of ISIS. Anyway, sit back, relax, enjoy.
Now to an American who survived those blasts at the airport. Shireen Naragi was preparing to head back home here to the U.S. when two deadly bombs exploded. We spoke to her shortly after the attacks yesterday, and she joined us again just moments ago from Brussels.
I got up to the counter, checking my bag. She handed me over my luggage tickets, and they were still in my hand when I went to turn to Jeff, and that's when the first explosion hit. And then debris, like instantaneous, was just everywhere. Dust, it was kind of like a whirlwind, almost like a tornado had gone off inside of the building. As the second explosion went off, he was pretty much on top of me, threw me to the ground. He stayed on top of me for a while, and then he, since I was right near the check-in counter, he shoved me up on the conveyor belt where my luggage was, and the amazing American Airlines attendant, she grabbed my hand and pulled me with her underneath her her counter. So Jeff was sitting on like the luggage conveyor belt.
And Jeff is your boyfriend, and how you said how he came running towards you, and he, you know, acted so quickly, and you wish that you knew the ticket counter woman, that there was somebody there that you were huddled with, and you were hoping that you'd be able to get in touch with her and thank her.
She was good to me when she didn't have to be, and she was very sweet because I wouldn't let go of Jeff's hand, and he was trying to do the right thing to go see if it was safe for us to move, because the one thing I know about safety is just stay in place, I guess, until you know things are okay. And I wouldn't let go of his hand, and she kept reassuring me and, like, soothing me and, like, holding on to me and telling me it was okay, that he knew what he was doing. So,
you know, the humanity of moments like that, we hear about those stories over and over again.
Yeah.
Shireen, when we talked to you yesterday, you said you saw things that you, as you put it, you said you can't unsee, but you've had a little more time now, and so some memories are flooding back already, new memories?
Yeah, seeing that little girl latch onto her mom and having, like, dust all over her coat and in her hair, and that was hard. I mean,
the things that nobody ever should have to see. I'm sure your loved ones were so relieved when you got in touch with them. What did you tell them?
I just told them I loved them, and, I mean, I can't tell them I love them enough. Like, I'm one of the lucky ones. I get to go home, and I get to give them all hugs again, and I know a lot of people aren't as fortunate. So I just I feel very blessed and lucky, and I won't take it for granted.
And lastly, we see all the people around you right now, and people just really coming together. Everyone's so quiet. Just what is it that you want to tell people back in the States about these times that we're living in?
I've always realized that there's threats and that you see horrible things on the news, and you know that this world has a lot of evil people, but it just makes it so much more real and pressing. And I just want everyone to be really aware and, like, inform yourself about what's going on around you, because I was going to the airport to come home and this happened, and it can happen anywhere. And I just want to make sure everyone is safe and just lives in the now, I guess, and is aware of their surroundings is, I think, the most important thing.
Oh, good words there. Shireen, thank you. We're glad that you're safe, and we wish you a safe journey home. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
She can't wait to get home and get those hugs from her family.
That's right. She said she was one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, she was one of the lucky ones. She was one of the lucky ones. Unfortunately, the two siblings that they were looking for the past couple of days have been confirmed dead. And I think it's important to know here, or important to understand, that, you know, the whole thing's no joke. And here's the thing about it. ISIS is a very smart crew. They will lull you to sleep. They will put, like, what they did in Paris, and then now in Brussels. And you notice there's always a couple of months before these, you know, three, four, five, could be six. Sometimes, you know, groups like that will wait a year. Look how long, you know, Al-Qaeda waited. It was, what was it, 95 and then again in 2001. So there's never a time to really get laxed. When I say really get laxed, I mean you should be aware of your surroundings, no matter what you're doing, where you're at all times. You know, it just takes one look left, right, you know, every now and then, left, right. You know, you're going to see things in front of you because it's, you know, it's just going to catch your eye, your peripheral vision, you know, so that's not going to be a thing. But, you know, you need to look around and you need to pay attention.
because this is the world that we live in, unfortunately, right now. That's the whole crux of it right there. It's the world that we live in. CD89, my name is JDR, live on your iTunes, Android, and your iOS, and I shall return.
Thank you.
Back in the U.S. to an investigation at Los Angeles International Airport where a person thought to be a JetBlue flight attendant took off running after being selected for a random secondary screening. It happened on Friday. An investigator said today she left behind her shoes and a bag with 60 pounds of cocaine. NBC's Tom Costello has the details.
In police custody at LAX, neatly wrapped and stacked bricks of cocaine, 60 pounds of it confiscated after a flight attendant allegedly tried to get through a security checkpoint in Terminal 4. Police say the suspect, not in uniform, flashed a JetBlue ID but was randomly selected for a secondary screening. That's when she grabbed her bags and began running from the checkpoint. But she quickly dropped the bags, kicked off her Gucci shoes, then ran down an up escalator. Last seen outside the building running towards Terminal 5. Experts say the fact she got away and the cocaine nearly got through are big red flags.
Today it's employee smuggling drugs. Tomorrow could be an employee smuggling guns. Day after tomorrow could be employee smuggling a bomb.
At LAX, known crew members are not required to go through the same full screening that passengers do, but they can be pulled aside randomly. Fearing an insider threat like the one that may have brought down a Russian jetliner over Egypt last fall, veteran aviation security experts have long called for many more random checks of all airline and airport employees. JetBlue says it's cooperating with investigators. Police are still looking for the suspect and whether she planned to meet anyone on the other side of the checkpoint. Meanwhile, the LAX Airport Police Union says the case underscores why all airline employees should be required to go through full security.
Here's my question, folks. What in the hell was she thinking? What in the hell did you, I don't know if you saw it on the news or maybe you caught it on YouTube. Did you see how much cocaine she was trying to smuggle in? And when I worked at LaGuardia, like, I would see the pilots and, you know, the flight attendants. They were able to just walk through. But they could be just pulled for a random search. You know, usually, as far as I know, it's when you're suspected. It's when you're suspected of probably doing something, and she did. I don't know what she was thinking, because I mean, as a flight attendant, you know, you don't make great money, but you know, you kind of make middle class money, right? That's what I always thought. Anyway, CD89, GDR, I'll be back. With all the laughter, the smiling faces. You left me here with all the contradictions, lies and convictions. You left me here with all the unreal reality. All those crazy isolations, those crazy, crazy things. You left me here. You left me here. You left me here with all the crazy people making life a serious thing. You left me here with someone really missing a point. It's time to spread the love and not the hate. It's time to get rid of the nonsense. Gotta break it on down. Gotta do the me here. You left me here. You left me here. You left me here. Oh, you left me here.
Now to share his side of the story is the founder of Gawker, Nick Denton. Nick, good morning to you.
Hey, Dan.
Let me ask you, I was sitting here with you watching those jurors, and they had some pretty tough things to say about you. That one juror said you have no heart, no soul, that it's all about the almighty dollar, and it's sick. Just give me a sense of what goes through your head when you hear somebody say that.
Well, for a start, we never had any advertising running on this story. We didn't actually make any money out of it at all. And you know what it's like as a journalist. You know, if you actually were feeling every single thing that a subject was feeling when a story came out, you know, frankly, there would be no news. No stories would actually ever get written. And we do put the story first, and I am unapologetic about that.
Another of the jurors said, and I think I know your answer to this because I think you may have just answered it, but another of the jurors said she was looking for you to show some remorse. Do you feel any remorse about posting that sex tape now?
No, you know, I don't. We didn't post the sex tape. We posted 9 seconds of sexual activity in an excerpt of a much, much longer tape. It was in the context of a story. The story has been found newsworthy by a federal judge, by the appeals court on repeated occasions. I believe it was newsworthy. Those judges agreed that it was newsworthy, and so it is a story that we would do again.
When we spoke to those jurors, one of the things they told us was that a key moment for them was hearing your now former editor say that he would post a sex tape of a child as long as that child was north of 4 years old. Now, you've later said that he was joking, but I have to imagine that's a damaging moment.
Oh, it was absolutely a damaging moment. It was a flip remark, which he'd made at the end of a day. You know, he was being harried by Hogan's lawyers. The same question was being asked repeatedly, and you know, they got to him, and we paid a price.
One of your main arguments has been that the jury was not allowed to hear from a key witness, who would have said, you say, that Hogan knew he was being recorded during that sexual encounter. However, it's interesting, we asked the jury about this, and they said even if they had heard that at trial, it wouldn't have made a difference to them.
Well, I mean, I don't know how they could know that. Bubba Clem, who's the man in the very heart of this, the radio shock jock who shared his wife, encouraged his wife to sleep with Hulk Hogan and then taped the encounters. His testimony was actually vital. It was vital to our case. I think it was vital to any understanding of what was going on. You know, he was the one who actually received the text message from Hulk Hogan, you know, a document that was actually unsealed by the appeals court, you know, on the final day of trial, which actually shows that Hulk Hogan's motives in this case were entirely different from the ones that he actually was talking about.
It's worth noting that he has made, Clem has made varying statements on this issue of whether Hogan knew.
This was an interview to the FBI. You know, when lies are punishable, it's a crime to lie to the FBI. He said that Hogan knew that there were cameras in the house. He knew he was being taped. They were best friends. They knew everything about each other's life. So I just don't think it's credible for Hulk Hogan to pretend that he actually had no idea of what was going on.
Hogan gave an interview after the trial. He said there was a moment in the trial where the two of you were having a stare down and that you, quote, scared the hell out of him. Do you aware of this, and do you have any response to it?
I was aware that our eyes met for a considerable amount of time. He's looked at this whole thing, you know, through a wrestling metaphor. You know, it's some kind of wrestling match. It's a smackdown, leg drops. No, it's actually a serious case. You know, it's a serious case which I think in many people's eyes, you know, just trying to draw the line between privacy and the free press. I actually think it's more about, you know, publicity versus the free press. That Hulk Hogan was talking about his sex life incessantly on TMZ, on the Howard Stern show. He was joking about this tape. He didn't like the story that we wrote. You know, that's his right. It's the right of the jury not to like the story that we wrote. But it's a free press, and in this country, people are allowed to write what they want, and people are allowed to read what they want.
Nick Denton, thank you very much. Not over. That's very clear.
You know what I hear when I hear Mr. Gawker talk? I hear a guy that's trying to justify losing about, what, $135 million? You know, maybe that even breaks his company. I mean, listen, as far as journalism is concerned, you can push the envelope, sure you can. But, you know, even if it's just 9 seconds of a sex, you know, excerpt, it's 9 seconds. And you're putting that on your internet channel, and you're broadcasting that to millions of people. Therefore, humiliating the individual who partook in this 9 seconds of sex tape. That's none of your business. You know, just because he is a recognizable person, you know, he is a prominent entertainer, you know, it's no reason to go that far. What are you going to do next? Take a, you know, tape of them when they're taking a shit? It's ridiculous. There's no justification for that. You can say what you want, but in my opinion, there's no justification for that. There are some things that the public just doesn't need to know. Okay? Not like that. Sometimes things slip out and they end up in a magazine or something like that. But, you know, come on. You're giving me 9 seconds. I don't even care if it's 9 seconds. I don't care if it was 5 seconds. Why are you in this guy's bedroom or in her bedroom or whatever, whoever's bedroom you were in? It makes no sense. Anyway, CD89, live on your iTunes, your Android, your iOS. My name is JDR. We're on Podomatic.com. David Robinson on Blogspot.com. TomahQuan at your-poetry.com. The YouTube channel. And we are also on SoundCloud. Let me give my shout-outs to the NYPD, the FDNY, the ASPCA, North Shore Animal League, all first responders, and listen, all animal caretakers. They're great people. Wildlife SOS, Guardians of the Voiceless, My Brothers and Sisters in the Military, Alle meine Freunde in Deutschland. I might be back. I may not.
and so forth. It just occurred to me, crazy thought this afternoon. When you're in a romantic mood, and you're trying to make out, whose records do you put on? I've spent a lot of nice evenings listening to your music, and I just wonder, I wonder who Frank listens to.
Oh, I play Jerry Fail or some of those.
Interesting concept.
Yes, it is. But you know. I can answer that by telling you that in those lovely moments, I play Daphnis and Chloe, or the Sunken Cathedral, the Engulfed Cathedral, all that kind of classy jazz.
High class
stuff. I don't fool around with all that other stuff. Because,
Hey, look, I know you're going to do another number with the band, because I know you got a recording session tonight, and really, on behalf...
See, you look good, Don.
Well, that's it for me. Why don't you guys get with the band? Hey, Frank, it's good to see you. I just was hanging around in the hall, and they said Frank Sinatra's here, and I've never met him, you know. And I get the chill.
You'll excuse us, won't you?
Certainly, certainly.
Marco Mangananzo was hurt. Ooh.
Marco Mangananzo?
Fombino Bombazzo. 2 bullets in the head Thursday. Now this you don't believe. Excuse us, Johnny, you're from the Midwest, you're busy going, is the truck loaded? Guido says hi. He hasn't had a chance to talk to you. And from Jersey City, your good friend, Bubani Umbatsa.
What's his alias?
He started his car. He started his car with your album on, and now he's a highway.
Oh, that's funny.
But I tell you, I'm a Jew and you're an Italian. And here we have what? And this is a great Irishman. This is America.
Yes, true.
And that's why I just want to say, before we go any further, for 14 years, Johnny Carson kept saying, do you really know Frank? And I want you to know, Frank, I worship you and I love you. I really mean this. Because since I'm a kid, I used to blow in girls' ears and hear you go, la da da dee, and do it my way. I need a girl so bad. I love my wife, but she's ill. But you just got married, Frank. I just can't picture him on the wedding night standing in the room going, and did it all, and I suppose it's my way. And Barbara, his wife, is going, Frank, when you get a minute. God bless you. He just got married. Hey, all the good things. This is the most exciting night in the years that I've known Johnny Carson. He started me on this show. This is the most exciting night, and I, so help me. It's a great night. He was even nervous because he came to me and said, and I said, da, 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 da. You are a powerhouse, and Frank, I love you.
Can I tell a story about what this man did to me once? You may have known or heard about this. It was a true story. This is a long time ago, long before Don got married. I was eating dinner in a restaurant in New York, and I was with some friends, and he came over to the table, and he said, Frank, do me a favor, will you? He said, I'm sitting with a very pretty girl, and I'm trying to make out, you know. And he said, I told her I know you, and she really doesn't believe me. Would you stop by the table? I said, all right. I was just about finished. I was down to the espresso. And finally he went back, and I walked by the table, and I said, how are you, Don? Nice to see you. He said, can't you see I'm eating, Frank? What are you doing? And I went for the whole thing.
You bought that.
I stood with my mouth open.
This is the backside of Mom's Mabley, her new album on Mercury. I don't think I'll turn it around.
Turn it around, Mert.
No. I'm chicken, Moms. But it's a terrific... stuff you really can't do on the show here.
Oh, yeah. Do it anywhere. I want all my children to buy my records at all times.
Ah, okay.
They'll find a place for them. You ain't gonna hear nothing you ain't gonna hear in the street.
Yeah. Moms, there's a little excitement in your life, though, with recording.
Yes, since I saw you murdered
it. I've been hearing it all summer, and it's sensational. You have the number two record in the country right now.
Yeah.
Will you do it for us?
No,
I thought you were going to say no. Will you? I love it. Here's Moms Mabel.
Anybody here seen my old friend Abraham? Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seems a good die young. I just looked around and he was gone. Has anybody here seen my old friend John? Can you tell me where he's gone? You know he freed a lot of people, but it seems a good die young. I just looked around and he was gone. Has anybody here seen my old friend Martin Luther? Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seems a good die young. I just looked around and he was gone. Didn't you love the things that they stood for? Didn't they try to find some good for you and me? And we'll be free someday soon. Oh, it's got to be one day. Has anybody here seen my little Bobby? Can you tell me where he's gone? I thought I saw him walking over the hill with Abraham, Martin, and John. They were going home. They were just going home. They were just going home.
that's lovely.
You like that song?
Yeah.